Good Thursday. Today is April the 17th, and you're listening to My Farm. We're going to visit today with Bill Bayless. He is currently serving as chairman of the Ohio Soybean Council and get an update on Arable Labs. Some neat expansions going on within that organization. We'll have all the details after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants. Simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
I'm joined today by Bill Bayless. Bill's with the Ohio Soybean Council, and Bill, a lot of exciting things going on with the organization and obviously in the industry. But let's talk specifically about Ohio, the Ohio Soybean Council, and what's been going on.
It has been very productive time that I've had with the Ohio Soy Council. Honored to serve this year and last year as the Ohio Soy Council's chairman of the board. So it's been a very busy time. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I feel very good about what time I've spent and how our soybean checkoff funds are being utilized. It just makes you feel good to know that it's well worth the time and money invested.
Well, one of the golden children of the Ohio Soybean Council and all the efforts you guys have worked on is Arable Labs. And you've talked about it numerous times, and all the board members very proud of it. A lot of exciting things going on as far as products that have been developed by Arable Labs. But now also exciting news that we're going to be constructing another lab down in the southern part of the state. Talk a little bit about that and what's going on down at Shawnee State University.
There's some of these amazing things about how time goes fast, but Arable Lab idea was conceived just 4 or 5 years ago by one of our staff, Barry McGraw. He had worked as a former employee for Battelle Institute Research Labs, had all the background information for that, come up with the fact that he could rent some space real reasonable from the Ohio Wesleyan University campus over in Delaware. So he did, rented just a couple lab spaces that wasn't being used, and it's just taken off from there. And the very first one that really everybody, I think, recognizes now is RoofMax. He come up with a coating to put on asbestos shingles. And it's just been one new development after another, and we've actually got the attention of several of our fellow state soybean boards that they're contributing into that lab's funding too. Now we've got commercial companies that wants to get into the more environmentally sensitive deep type products. So they come to us asking, how can we incorporate soy so we can put this on our label? And that's kind of the way of thinking around the world. Your last thought was our expansion. We weren't into the plastic molding part. We just didn't have the equipment there at Ohio Wesleyan. And so Shawnee State University down in Pike County, Ohio, come up with an idea where they would do a joint venture with us. And we contributed some monies to start up with. We get to design a lab setup down there. We take some of our own equipment down there for plastic manufacturing like that, then we use all theirs. They were the number one plastic university in the state of Ohio. So it's really just unreal how fast things are building in just a matter of a few short years. We wouldn't have dreamed of accomplishing this much.
Very good stuff going on. Again, my guest today is Bill Bayless. Bill, currently serving as chairman of the Ohio Soybean Council, was chairman last year, chairman this year, and also serving on USB, the United Soybean Board. Bill, thanks so much for all your time and for the updates today.
Thank you, Dusty.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
You know, this time of year at Washington, D.C., the cherry blossoms are an annual tradition that's celebrated in the nation's capital, but they also do have a historical connection with the U.S. Agriculture Department. USDA's Rod Bain has more.
Springtime visits to the nation's capital include timing such trips to see the Tidal Basin cherry trees in bloom.
It's spring. Everyone around the North Temperate world is great to be leaving winter behind. Summer is around the corner. We're all getting up. We're getting excited. And the flowering cherries just offer a tremendous graceful beauty to matching sort of that energy we have here in the springtime.
That's the director of the U.S. National Arboretum in Washington, D.C., Richard Olson. The National Park Service oversees and maintains the tidal basin as part of the system of the National Mall and Monument Parks in the district. Yet Olson is quick to point out regarding the tidal basin cherry trees.
It wouldn't have been possible without the United States Department of Agriculture.
It was the work of Dr. David Fairchild that provided inspiration. As head of the then Plant Exploration Office in the early 20th century, which later became part of what is now the National Germplasm System within the Agricultural Research Service.
Dr. Fairchild was instrumental in arranging for and inspiring people to do the gift. He had a garden here in Washington, D.C. He had planted flowering cherries at the attention of First Lady Helen Taft.
That introduction of a traditional Japanese custom to the First Lady of the United States.
The viewing of cherries is a long tradition. It's been adopted specifically for cherry blossoms. It's called haname.
Coincided with Helen Taft's vision for a music park in what was previously the mudflat areas of Washington, D.C., and further advocacy for cherry blossoms in a new park by National Geographic Society board member Eliza Skidmore. The result?
1912, the original gift of several thousand flowering cherry trees from the people of Japan, the mayor of Tokyo.
With the First Lady and wife of the Japanese ambassador planting the first two trees in March of that year. Maturity of the trees led to eventual full bloom. And along the way, ornamental cherry trees planted at the White House. And in 1934, the first cherry blossom festival, now held annually. Richard Olson notes the long-standing relationship between the National Park Service and National Arboretum regarding the tidal basin cherry trees.
The National Park Service recognizes they have a cherished treasure of cherry trees down in the tidal basin. So when they need help or assistance, we're glad to help. We have a long history. It goes back decades working with the National Park Service. We have botanists that help identify the trees. We have horticulturists that help propagate. We definitely lend our hand to botany and propagation and sharing of cherry trees that we think could be adaptable.
This year's National Cherry Blossom Festival continues through April 13th. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.